Good afternoon, everyone, or you know, wherever you happen to be. My name is Basil Gohar. I'm the Web Interface Applications Manager here at OSC, Ohio Supercomputer Center, and today we'll be presenting our third Open On Demand webinar. And thank you all for joining us. For those of you that are new, we will do a recap of the basics about Open On Demand, what it's about, a little bit about the project, goals, things like that. And then we'll move on to the core agenda topics, which will consist basically of two main areas. First, we will discuss the recent Open On Demand 1.0 release and the features of Open On Demand overall, including what was included and what was new with the release itself. And then we'll go into some of the features that are planned for the Open On Demand 1.1 release, which is coming up very soon this month, and including the topic about integrating Jupyter, the web application Jupyter, into Open On Demand, the application development features, and also the KeyCloak authentication server and two-factor authentication in general. And then we'll talk, as always, about some of the upcoming webinar features and upcoming events, future webinars, and places that you might be able to meet some of the Open On Demand team at conventions and whatnot, and the future direction of the project. I'm sorry. So, Open On Demand is it's an open source software project. We are an NSF funded. It's NSF funded, and it's designed to be installable, targeting an HPC cluster or clusters. Ranging anywhere from a standalone system, you know, you just install it on a single box that you want to test it out, or just for a very specific purpose. You could install it for your lab, serve a department, an entire university, or even one of the national resources, like some of the national supercomputing centers around the country. And it's intended to be more than just an out-of-the-box solution. Open On Demand, it's a platform, and it's intended that it can be extended through additional and custom apps. And in fact, the upcoming 1.1 release will be the most significant release to affect this area by introducing the application development features that will make it easier to create and deploy your own apps. Open On Demand provides a single point of entry for an HPC center's services. A user needs only three things in order to connect: the URL to access the instance, and then their username and password, whatever you've given them for that. For the user, there's zero install required. The interface is completely browser-based. Any relatively modern browser will be able to support all of Open On Demand's features on all of the supported platforms: Windows, Mac OS, Linux, Firefox, Chrome, Edge, and Safari. It's a single sign-on platform, and that means that basically once the user has authenticated, all the services provided through Open On Demand will also be authenticated through that. They will not need to put in their username and or password again after they've logged in once. And it's firewall friendly. All of the traffic is kept on the port 443, the common HTTPS port. And it is, of course, encrypted and secure, because part of our setup includes setting up a security certificate. Brief timeline over the past year or so. We started back at the end of 2016 when we released OSC On Demand 3.0. Obviously, it's the third iteration by its versioning there of the On Demand platform here at OSC. And Open On Demand basically started off as the project we developed here at OSC for our clients, and then we decided to go ahead and open source it and share it with others. And OSC On Demand 3.0 was the first time Open On Demand was being used for, in a public-facing area, and we used it to serve our clients in a production environment. At the same time, in that quarter, we began beta testing with some external sites. We gave them, some instructions on how they could get the code themselves and start using it. Then in the first quarter of this year, we made our first public and fully installable release. And of course, adoption started to spread, and we had more sites trying it out and testing it. And that coincided, of course, that quarter as well with our first webinar. In Q2, development continued, and we had our second webinar. And then here we're in the third quarter of 2017, and we released Open On Demand 1.0, and here we are at the third webinar. So Let's talk a little bit now about what was in Open On Demand 1.0 release and what's in Open On Demand itself as well. So what we have with Open On Demand, we can describe it as two larger areas and a few details within. Open On Demand consists of, you know, its apps, applications that it comes with, and then also the authentication that it provides. So, you know, when we say apps, though, let's be clear. You know, there's a lot of, you know, apps, App Store, you know, Google Apps, things like that. These are all kind of, you know, it's an overloaded term. So let's talk about what we mean when we say an app. With Open On Demand, the vast majority of the functionality is presented through apps. Pretty much everything the users interface with after they've authenticated is going to be one app or another. So, for example, the file browser, My Jobs, the desktop, Jupyter, and everything else, they all exist as apps within Open On Demand. And these apps can fall into three basic categories, which we will talk about after this. There's the cluster access apps, there are gateway apps, and there are the interactive HPC apps, which we'll also define what each of these mean. The cluster access apps within Open On Demand, they grant access to the cluster services very similar to what would be available through your typical login node. So things like a shell or terminal, file access, browsing, uploading, downloading, things like that, and also in a batch system, in a batch environment, your job status. These apps, they run on the on-demand server in the typical layout of an Open On Demand setup. And these apps also don't usually submit jobs. They're not really job-oriented. Granted, you can query your resource manager and see what's going on in the batch system, but it's not creating new jobs, or its work for these apps is not happening in the context of a batch job. The other type of app would be a gateway app. These are apps that provide some more advanced functionality, typically while they're interacting with the batch system. And an example of an app that ships with Open On Demand that does this is the My Jobs app, which they usually will handle workflows, and they'll submit jobs and provide some kind of job management functionality for their own managed jobs. So My Jobs app, for example, and we were just discussing this, it will provide an interface for the jobs you create within it. And you can delete those jobs, copy them, you know, manage them. And that's typically what we would see in this class of jobs. Now, if you want to talk, not to derail, but there are gateway style apps can exist outside of Open On Demand as well. We're not talking about those, but those in the future may become part of what we would be offering as well within Open On Demand. But right now, all of our gateway apps are within, you know, written for and within Open On Demand. The third class of apps include the interactive HPC apps. So IHPC apps are interactive apps that they basically, their functionality exists fully within a batch job. They allow the client to interact with a running job and perform their work directly on the compute hardware. So you would, you know, start a job. Once a job starts and is running, you'd submit a job, and once it starts running, the Open On Demand then gives you access through, you know, the proxy mechanism that we have built in to actually interact with that running job. You're not waiting for it. You actually go in, do your thing, and then, you know, the job either exits or you terminate the job once you're done. And examples of this are the desktop app and the Jupyter app, which is new, and we're going to talk about that. So that's not really a 1.0 feature. Jupyter, we're making it, you know, instructions on how to get it set up here in 1.1. So maybe this will be our first stop, because there's some terminology that it would be very, very helpful if we talk about that. If anybody has any questions, you can either put them in the Q&A or you can ask them in the chat.
Will this be recorded? Will we be providing
a
recording?
Oh, yes, actually. We will be providing a recording, and did I start the recording? Just give me one moment. Here we go. Recorder. Okay. We are recording now. Little oversight on my part. We're recording from now. Any questions so far? Okay, let's continue. Okay, so we just got done talking about the basics of Open On Demand and also introducing the terminology for the various types of applications. And now let's talk about Open On Demand 1.0 and the specific apps within it and what was in that release. So within the categories that we just defined, the cluster access, the gateway, and the IHPC apps, the cluster access apps are the dashboard, the files app, the editor, the file editor, the terminal, and the active jobs apps. The dashboard actually is an app. That's what you log into first. When you first after you've first logged in, what you see is the dashboard. And the dashboard would display message of the day. If you've configured it, it would display the menus to access the other apps and provides other types of functionality. And you typically launch other apps from the dashboard itself. Those are what we call the cluster access apps. The gateway apps, what we have right now in 1.0 is the My Jobs app. And for the interactive HPC apps, we have the desktop apps, such as launching a Linux desktop, either the GNOME or the Mate environment, or whatever you have configured yours as well beyond that. With regards to authentication, Open On Demand ships with just HTTP basic auth. And obviously, that is not the most desirable setup, especially for a production environment. So what's been birthed from that also are some community-based solutions where they've gone beyond the basic auth to actually provide either Shibboleth or OpenID Connect-based authentication, including CI Logon and KeyCloak. We know that at least a couple other sites have set it up with either Shibboleth or OpenID Connect, and we ourselves here at OSC, we've set up both CI Logon and KeyCloak-based OpenID Connect authentication solutions for our production services. And the good news is that 1.1 has, we're providing a solution beyond HTTP Basic Auth, which we'll talk about a little bit later. So let's talk now about Open On Demand 1.1 and some of the features planned for the release, and beginning with Jupyter, and we'll talk about the Jupyter integration first. And 1.1 is our next planned release. We're expecting to release it this month, September 2017, and amongst the features that we're going to discuss today is an example of the Jupyter app installed and running, we'll mention in the release how to actually get that installed and get it configured for your environment. We'll talk about application development features that come with Open On Demand 1.1, and we'll also discuss KeyCloak and two-factor authentication capabilities that are available now in Open On Demand 1.1 and how you can get that set up as well, and some considerations and some future plans for that as well. So talking about Jupyter, you know, first we should ask the question and justify why talk about Jupyter. Jupyter is a well-known web application that's frequently used in scientific computing. It's one of the requested applications. We've been requested to support Jupyter. There are requests as well for RStudio and others as well, which we'll get into that, and we'll talk about that. Jupyter lets users create and share live examples through the IPython notebooks, which are a very famous way of actually like an instructional form of giving demonstrations. You can actually, you know, write curriculum around IPython notebooks with live Python demos, you know, graphically generating, you know, charts, graphs, interactive calculations, and things like that. And it lets you, you know, give examples that include code, equations, and more. And Jupyter is a class of, you know, we don't have a good name for these, but, you know, if you want to call them full web applications. They usually exist on their own, and Open On Demand allows us to actually embed them in and manage them through an Open On Demand instance. And other examples of these that we plan to support in the future include RStudio and Console Server, both of which we actually also have running here at OSC, but have not yet documented how to get that set up in a more generic sense at other centers. If you're interested in that or other types of web applications, please let us know. We would love to work with you on that. One other possibility that we're considering is actually the Galaxy project, which is at a similar level, but a little bit more complex, and we haven't fully integrated that yet. That's in our plan in the future. And Open On Demand handles authentication and the per-user environment and session management for all of these. So, you know, when you run Jupyter or RStudio or Comsol server through Open On Demand, you're actually running it, again, as with everything else in Open On Demand, as you yourself, the user. So any files you create or have access to are what the user is able to create or has access to. It's their personal environment. It's not actually a shared environment. It's very, you know, totally private based on the file system permissions. So if your file system permissions allow others to access, then you could, then others can access it. Otherwise, it's however it's set up. And for more detail and an example, a more, you know, detailed example than what I'm going to show today, I encourage you to see Dr. Hudak's presentation on Open On Demand for another, you know, more detail. He actually walks through an example of using Jupyter in an instructional sense. That link is right there, and with, you know, at the start of the presentation where that's actually being discussed. So we'll go ahead and give an example of launching and connecting to a Jupyter Notebook server on a compute node. I'm going to upload an example and then actually open and run it. So let's go ahead and break out from here. And stop sharing here. Open up my browser and start sharing that. Okay, a lot of questions. That's good. So just to answer the questions, we are interested definitely in providing as many possible apps, as many apps as possible. And if you have specific ones that are more important to you than others, please definitely let us know. We would love to implement what's important to you as quickly as possible. Okay, let's get the... I'm just going to go ahead and share my screen here. This is my our vanilla Open On Demand installation at ood.osc.edu. And just as a reminder, anybody that would like to see a vanilla Open On Demand install set up in a typical fashion, by all means, feel free to reach out to us and request an OSC HPC account. We would be very happy to provide you one. And you could log into this instance. You could log into any of our production instances with that account. But this is set up to show you what our typical Open On Demand install is expected to be, you know, if you follow our documented policies. And this has all the basic apps, the file browser, the jobs related apps, the cluster, the shell apps, and the interactive HPC apps, including the desktops, and also now the Jupyter Notebook app. So let's go ahead and get that started. And I'll just launch it in its typical case. And if you're interested to know how this is set up, we have documentation for this, and we would be happy to help you get Jupyter set up. It's not very hard. You just need to specify the cluster you want the Jupyter application to launch on, and then you also would have to basically set up how you want the job to be started, depending on your resource manager. We don't walk through that today. We're just going to show Jupyter itself running in a typical example. So what I've done is, if you've seen our other types of interactive applications, you're familiar with this kind of inbuilt session manager, and basically it tells you what host you're running on, all kinds of things. You can take a shortcut, actually, if you want to see. If you click on that session ID link, you'll see the job output directory. So these are all the scripts that are generated to run the job and any output from your batch system, you know, or resource manager that you have configured. You know, these are just for information and for debugging if you run into any problems. So we have Jupyter running on one of our compute nodes, and that compute node has offered all 28 cores running. So let's go ahead and connect to our Jupyter instance. So here's Jupyter loading up. By default, it loads up in my home directory, my messy home directory here. And what I'd like to do, actually, is upload an example IPython notebook that one of my engineers, Dr. Jeremy Nicholas, has prepared for us. It's nothing too elaborate. I'm sure he would be embarrassed to even give it that much attention. But through the interface, you can upload. And if you scroll down, this is the example right here, example integrate.ipython notebook. And so when you click on it, it'll load up already, you know, pre-computed because it was there, but you can actually step through it and recalculate or make some changes. I'm just going to show that it's running, basically. I'm not going to do anything fancy, just for expediency purposes, but, you know, you can step through, each cell will run, you know, and take the, you know, load up the necessary libraries, you know, set up your definitions, set up your variables and arrays, keep going, you know, stepping through. And then here's the plot command, and you'll notice that when I actually run it, so I'm in it and I'll run it, it'll first go away and then recalculate it. So it just recalculated it there using the compute hardware that I'm running on. And again, to point out, this is not running on your on-demand node or your web server. It's running on one of our compute nodes on our Owens cluster. In our case, it's the Owens cluster. So, you know, this syntax of the URL shows that it's actually being proxied through to one of the compute nodes. So just so it's not running on the web server, it's being proxied through the web server, but the execution of the code is happening on that node that I got through a batch system. And so we step through again, and we have another plot here. Click on again, the graphic goes away and gets recomputed the same, and, you know, keep going. Just basically showing that it does actually work, does actually run, and computes. So, you know, by all means, you're welcome to try this out. We'd love to have folks try this out, get it running at your center. Configuration is not, you know, overly burdensome, but, you know, we got it working at our center. We'd love to get it working at your center as well if you have any questions. So we'll take another break if anyone has any questions about that. You know, incidentally, just so you know, we run using the our scientific version of Python is Anaconda, and Jupyter does support, and we have configuration to support the Conda extensions that come with Jupyter. So you'll see that when you look into the configuration files. And you can actually fiddle with those, disable them if you don't have them, or try them out. So any questions? Oops. I'm sorry. I keep clicking on the mute button accidentally. It's right next to everything else. Okay, Martin, yes, we're running it on the compute node. Okay, I see Brian already answered that question. Any other questions? Okay, well, you know, feel free to ask at any point. We're going to go ahead and proceed with our presentation.
Is Jupyter support publicly available or coming soon?
Yes, actually, we have a GitHub project set up in the Open On Demand, in the OSC organization, with an example, a Jupyter example. And that's what's running here on our vanilla Open On Demand install. It's not identical to what we run at OSC in production. You know, we have other things for that. But you should be able to start from there, clone that. You know, I'll go ahead and just pull it up. Yeah, after the 1.1 release, you should be able. Oh, okay, thanks. Yeah. So if you go to OSC's GitHub page and go to bc_example_Jupyter, did someone paste that? Okay, Brian, you pasted that in there. You have instructions on how to do it and how to install it. And, you know, if you just add this by the instructions, you should be able to get it working. As I said, we would love to actually help you with that if you've run into any problems, you know.
But it won't work until after.
Yeah, and note that Jupyter is intended, is a 1.1 feature. This support works after our 1.1 release. So you're welcome to fiddle with it now, but we're expecting it all to work with the 1.1 release, which is coming this month. You know, hopefully before the end of this month. I mean, before the end of this month, you should have it all out there. Okay? Any other questions? If all goes well, we expect the same to be true for RStudio. RStudio does have a one fiddly bit about it that may have additional requirements, but that's going to be the case with all of these web applications. There's always going to be exceptions and special things that have to be done. The reason why these come after we've done it at OSC is because we figure it out at OSC first, then we try to make the generic solution that would work with others, and that usually involves working with partners. So if you're interested in Jupyter, let us know. If you're interested in RStudio, let us know. Contact us on the mailing list. Let's work through it and try to get it working at your center. Once we've got it working outside of OSC, we feel more confident to include that kind of support. Other examples like MATLAB, the GUI applications, those should not be as complicated in most cases. As long as you can run them normally at the center, you can make a simple IHPC app for them. That's usually not too difficult compared to the full web apps. Alrighty. Continuing on. So let's talk about application development and what comes with Open On Demand 1.1. So before going further, again, why should we care about apps? We at OSC would love to, you know, make as much available as possible, but we have limited bandwidth. The development team here is four of us, and we have some support from our systems folks in the infrastructure side, you know, getting Open On Demand working, but that's not nearly a large enough team to support everyone's needs. We support our needs here at OSC, but we envision Open On Demand as a platform that will actually allow you, the users of Open On Demand, to actually contribute back. And if you develop something useful, we actually hope that you will allow us to share that with others. You know, we can provide you, you know, your own the repository, or you can share your own repository on GitHub or other access to the code, so that we can advertise that as another Open On Demand app. Because it's, you know, the critical mass is going to be when everybody's able to contribute back, and that's why this 1.1 release of Open On Demand is so significant, because it's going to open up the doors to everybody contributing back to Open On Demand and having community developed apps. And, you know, on top of the fact of sharing, each center knows your own needs better than we do. So you might have an app that is very useful to you, but it doesn't mean that it's useful to everybody else, but that's not a requirement. You might just need something specific to your setup. Your clients wanted something, you know, something in your center is unique. You know, this is another reason why application development is so useful. You can develop your own solutions and not just rely on what comes with the general apps that are shipped with Open On Demand. So Open On Demand with application development allows you to extend it with your own custom applications. In addition, in support of this, there's a new development menu that you can enable with an environment variable that will allow you to restart applications, which is very, very important when it comes to application development. It'll also allow you to access documentation, which you can configure that where that points to. So if you provide documentation for your developers on how to get started, what considerations they need, that's all available to you. And it will also allow you to clone, edit, and test your own applications in the new sandbox development environment. And we're actually going to show this off right now.
You may want to point out that a sandbox is a term we use for your own local copy
of
apps.
Yeah.
Every developer has his or her own sandbox.
That's right. Yeah. So Dave is mentioning a very good point. The lingo, sometimes we get so used to it, we don't always clarify when we should. The sandbox development environment is the developer's own personal environment. It's not accessible to anybody else. It's only accessible to them. And everybody has every developer will have their own. So that's where they would, you know, do their testing, do their development, and so on. This is not, you know, to take an app and publish it later is a separate, distinct step, which we can talk about in a future time. This is just showing how to get started. All right. So we're going to show off the sandbox and show off a very quick example. So the example that we have is a simple app that dumps the output of the PS command. And then we're going to show that app and how to actually convert it into another very basic app showing the output of the quota command on our system. So we're going to go ahead and break for that interactive. demo now. So to get started, let me go ahead and delete my running session here. We don't need Jupyter to run anymore. And close out my browser tabs. And so I didn't show this off yet, but this is the new menu. In addition to having Jupyter available in our vanilla Open On Demand, we also now have the development menu set up. So the three commands that I mentioned, restarting the web server, a link to the developer documentation, and the sandbox, my sandbox apps, which is the development environment. Let's go ahead and go into our sandbox right now and just go to the develop menu and click on my sandbox apps. So by default, you're not going to have anything in there because you'll be a new developer. So to start with, first let's make a new product. You know, there's a couple, obviously you can launch a shell, launch files, you have a trash for when you delete an app, so I've deleted five of my apps to clean it out and make it look simpler. If you have so many apps that, you know, you can't see them, well, you can search for them just like you can search for your active jobs. You know, this is the typical interface for when we have tabular data and the apps will show up that way. So to make, the first step when making a new app is to actually click on a new product. And by default, you can clone an existing app. So when you clone an existing app, you basically will provide access to where that Git code itself exists. So let's clone an existing app and start by giving it a name. So although the PS app is going to be our starting point, we're not interested in making a PS app. We're interested in making a Quota app. So I'll just call it Quota. And let me just bump up the font size a bit here. We're going to call it Quota. And then I need to provide the Git remote address. It's in my history, but let's go ahead and actually go in here. And OSC has the example of the ood example ps node.js. So it's a node.js application, similar to the file browser and our the shell app is Node, right? Yeah. And this is the app itself, and we're just going to find its clone address, which is right here. I'm going to go ahead and copy that. Go back in here and just paste it. And this is basically the source of my code. If I wanted to access via SSH, I would have to have an SSH key installed and then recognized by my repo. It tells me that I have one, but I'm going to go simple and just pull the code from HTTPS. It's publicly accessible code. You could do the same thing yourself. That's why I wanted to do that. And we're going to create a new Git project from this. This option basically strips all the Git information and initiates a new Git repo. I'm not going to be contributing back into this project upstream, but I may want to, you know, make changes locally. So that's why you would create a new Git project from this, and that's the purpose of that detail. And I'll click on submit.
Where is that Git repo?
That Git repo is actually in my, this is the path to it. So it's under my home directory.
So it's stored on the, in your cluster storage in your home directory.
Exactly. So this is being stored under your, you know, by default, everyone gets an on-demand directory in their home directory. And that's going to be then under dev, under that, and then under the name that I gave it when I first created it. So here's the full path, users, APPL. APPL is my primary group. And then bgohar is my system username, and then the on-demand directory, and so on. And notice the Git remote detail is missing, and so is the description, and so on. So it does come with some basic information. The name of the application is called Running Processes, and the description display the output of the PS command. So let's take a look at how it behaves by default. I'll just launch it. And what you see here is literally the text output from running the PS command. So this is what's running. Now, interesting to note, this is running on the on-demand node. This is not running within a batch job. So by that lingo, this is what we would call a cluster access app. It's just showing me information that would be available to me on a typical login node. All right, so let's go ahead and begin editing it. And we have some nice simple links here. I can open up the files application in the directory where my app code is. So if I do that, you'll see that I have this is really all that the app consists of, the simple app.js file, that's where the code is, the manifest, which is the metadata, and then the README and license, which are typical files you'd have in any kind of a repo. So let's go ahead and click on edit. Let's click on the app.js file, and we'll edit it with the internal editor that we have, the file editor that comes with Open On Demand. And everything here is a very basic, bare-bones Node.js app. All we're going to change is the command that is executed. Instead of ps with the ufx parameters, I'm going to change it to quota with hyphen spw. And I'll go ahead and save. Now, the file's saved, the changes have been saved to the system, but if I go back to the app and reload, it's still just the PS app, because the app is still loaded in memory. And you'll notice the files, the file editor app, you see the process has changed because that's the node that I'm running on. You can see that my actions that I just took, the processes are loaded into memory. And it's for that reason, actually, that the app is still loaded in memory and why it's still showing PS data. So what I actually have to do is go back into my dashboard, and I have to restart the app. When I restart the app, then it will flush the contents of the app the memory, and then actually restart the app fully. Now if I go back, you'll notice the output changes. Reload, and now I have the output of quota from the system. But there is we would want to change, because if you look, it's still called running processes, but it's no longer running processes, and it still says display the output of the PS command. What we actually want to do is change the manifest file, which is, if we go back to the file browser, manifest.yml. And I want to edit this to have the right information. So instead of running processes, we want to name it quota. And instead of display the output of the PS command, we want it to display the output of the quota command. And instead of a generic icon, let's go ahead and change it to something a little bit more representative. And we'll change it to HDDO. So the basically Open On Demand ships with some font awesome icons that we can make use of, and this is the syntax to access those from within Open On Demand in this manifest file. We have some code to handle that a little bit intelligently. Save those changes, and I go back into the dashboard now. When I refresh, my quota app, my PS app has now changed and transformed into fully the quota app. Then, of course, nothing changes in the running app, because it just still is a quota app. That is probably the most basic example, but it does highlight and show all the different aspects of the application development dashboard, the sandbox, running an app, having to restart if you've made changes, how to access the different the files of your app, and so on. So let's go ahead and take another break and see if we have any questions. Any questions? Any ideas that you would like to explore within a application development environment or otherwise? Any ideas for an app that you think would be crucial? We basically did command line output. There are far more advanced things that we could do. But this is actually very much the interface that was used to develop, or has that OSC developers, we've developed several apps using this interface. So we are, dogfooding this. We use this interface frequently for our own internal usage. So it's not just something, we're just throwing out there. We've used this quite a bit internally. Yeah, and of course, these are all running as the user. These are not available to anyone yet. To publish this or have it available in the menu for other users, that's a distinct step. The code would have to be moved into a shared location where the other production apps are. You'd have to, you know, make sure the manifest properly has the right category in it. The manifest that ships with the PS example app does not have all those slots in it. You'd have to add those things. But, you know, it's just a few more steps. You would have to be the system administrator to make those changes, because it would be at the on the file system itself, not just your home directory, on the local nodes file system.
I think you should move on.
All right, sure. Okay, will we be able to control who is a developer and can access the development menu? So there is one flag that enables development overall, and with some minor customization, you can also determine who should be given that development access as well. That is going to require some change, but you can specify that by group or by user list. You can give some permissions, like who should be a developer. By default, it's just a flag, a universal flag, and you can customize that more. And we'll probably provide some documentation on how you could do that for your particular setup. There is a minor change to be able to do that, to customize for that purpose. Okay? All right, moving on. So, let's talk about KeyCloak and two-factor authentication. So, before we begin, we need to clarify that authentication on Open On Demand is dictated by the fact that we're using the Apache HTTP server as the front-end proxy for everything. So, for each authentication mechanism, there's two things that you need. The first is to configure Apache to protect the resources that you need via authentication, and then to configure Apache to map the authenticated user to a system user. And what this means is that while there's some restrictions imposed by that, any method of configuring Apache for authentication could potentially be used for Open On Demand. So Apache does have several, and we've made use of a few of those in the past as well, and we'll talk a little bit about that. So right now there are two currently supported options in the upcoming 1.1 release. It's basic authentication via mod authnz LDAP, or a federated authentication. And there are two popular kinds. There's Shibboleth via modship, and OpenID Connect via modauth OIDC. And these would be available via, you know, for example, a campus-wide authentication mechanism, Shibboleth or OpenID Connect or CI Logon. You know, your campus may provide something that you can tap into for federated authentication, or you would just set up your own local identity provider. You'll just set it up and configure it against, say, your internal LDAP. We at OSC have done both. We allow our production users to log in either via CI Logon or to log in locally via OpenID Connect alone with KeyCloak, which is set up to authenticate against our internal LDAP. So some example deployments. There are two outside institutions that are working with Open On Demand, and they've configured it with their own pre-existing federated authentication systems. One did Shibboleth, and the other one did OpenID Connect. Without their permission, we're not going to mention who they are, but they're welcome to share if they want to put in the comments or on the users list. And OSC, we did use Shibboleth initially for our awesome Open On Demand portal, which is the commercial face for our services. We have primarily commercial clients through that portal. And then we also use CI Logon, as I mentioned before, for our On Demand, the academic portal on demand at osc.edu. And now we use OpenID Connect for both Awesome and OSC On Demand via KeyCloak. We use KeyCloak now as our local IDP. And part of our plans for 1.1 is to provide basic documentation on how you could do similar setups. Obviously, It's going to have to be configured and customized for your own cases, but we'll provide the documentation for how we got it set up and where you probably would have to make some changes. And we'll provide detailed documentation on setting up KeyCloak as a local IDP in Open On Demand as well. So we'll provide our details will be about KeyCloak, and in the future we're going to provide you know, the documentation for how to set it up with other authentication mechanisms that are supported by Open On Demand. It's a little. I know we're getting a little bit in the weeds here, but this is important because this has been amongst the most requested or discussed features: how to authenticate, how to set up, how to do things. Because by default, basic HTTP auth is pretty pretty basic and not really sufficient, and does not instill a lot of confidence in the security or maturity of the code base. Let's talk about these different ways of doing things a little bit and some comparison between them. So federated authentication via KeyCloak versus basic auth. Basic auth has a lot of drawbacks. Amongst them are each request includes the full username and password. Granted, that's going to be encrypted, but that would be in the headers of each request, and so actually we have code to strip that out of the headers before that those requests pass through to the underlying web processes, such as running the dashboard or the My Jobs app and so on, because otherwise the writer of that app could see that information and it would potentially be a security leak. It's slow because each request needs to make another LDAP request to the server, a request to the LDAP server to re-authenticate effectively every single request. Logout is only possible client-side by completely closing the browser, not just the tab or the tabs you had open. You need to actually quit out of the browser completely. And unfortunately, there's a bug in Safari that prevents WebSocket connections when using HTTP basic auth. And this, unfortunately, breaks the Open On Demand terminal app completely. So by default, with HTTP basic auth, Safari does not work with a terminal app, and that was we discovered this quite embarrassingly just one time when our boss Dave actually encountered this.
I believe it's not just I guess that's my mistake. It should say the shell app. I think that's the phrase we've been using for it.
A terminal shell, yeah.
But it's all WebSocket.
Yeah, any WebSocket. Yeah, so the NoVNC would not work. Mm-hmm. You know,
so
anything.
Desktop would not work. Jupyter would not work.
Exactly.
Shell would not work.
So KeyCloak brings with it a lot of benefits over basic auth, which includes its session-based authentication. So it's not just every single request. No, now you establish a session, and that reduces load on the system, and that's via OpenID Connect. It allows you to have a little bit nicer login page rather than a plain dialog box. You know, harkening back to the 90s for authentication, lets you put whatever graphics you want on there, color schemes to match the rest of your system. And there is two-factor authentication support out of the box with either Google Authentication or free OTP. So basically both Google Authenticator and free OTP follow the same standards for hash-based one-time passwords or time-based one-time passwords.
You should note, but not Duo yet.
Yes, we will get to Duo. So KeyCloak does not natively support Duo. And we'll talk about that a little bit later. Duo is the two-factor authentication mechanism that was requested by Open On Demand client users, and we have not been able to get that working with KeyCloak yet. How and when that will happen is to be seen. We're trying to work with KeyCloak and Red Hat or Duo, one or the other, to try to convince them to work with each other and come up with an integrated solution so that everyone gets the advantage of having Duo, since Duo was used quite frequently now in academic and other contexts. And two-factor authentication can be per user or enforced for every user. So that's one advantage of KeyCloak. You actually have some granularity on how you can apply that. So you might have a class of users that require two-factor authentication and another class of users that don't need it, and you're going to be able to split that over. So just a few screenshots. We're not going to show you logging in. That's kind of redundant. But here's, when you log in with Open On Demand, by default, you get the nice, plain-looking dialog box. And, it's not really how a modern web application is expected to look. So, that's why we felt it was urgent to move away from that. when you log in with KeyCloak, you can get a branded login. And this is, for example, the actual login page for our awesome application server. So we have the logo on there, you know, the same scheme, you know, our buttons look the same and so on. And then with two-factor authentication, if you've enabled that, you get an additional step where you have that one-time code to input, and then you load up your app you know, that you've already paired with the server to, you know, through, you know, the QR code image, and you just basically refer to your app. You know, if you have Android, you'll have the screen on the left. If you have Apple, you'll have on you know, an iPhone on the right. It'll give you that code, and you just type in that code, and then you'll have you have that two-factor authentication taken care of. excuse me. Now, KeyCloak does have some considerations. It's not a slam dunk win with very, very low burden of entry. There is some steps that have to be done. For one, it does require a separate host and some Apache or first Apache reverse proxy configuration, and its own, as a result, its own SSL certificate. We have not yet figured out a way to get this to run, or, you know, documented how to have it all run from within one host. By default, you're just going to have to set it up on a separate host. It may require its own separate database and its own system and user group, system user and group. You will need to have mod auth OpenIDC compiled against HTTP 2.24 because mod auth OpenIDC is a third-party authentication library. It is not just built into HTTP Apache HTTP server. You'll have to do the theme yourself, you know, which that kind of makes sense, but you would have to do that, you know, if you want to show it custom. Otherwise, you'll get the default look, which is probably not how your setup looks. And there is no Duo support built in, which we mentioned that because that's what's been requested. It does support other two-factor authentication mechanisms, though. So we want to ask the question, are these actually drawbacks, you know, or is this perfectly fine and suitable? We would really like to hear from you, your experience, and is this a suitable option for you? Your feedback is essential to us to help guide our development efforts, because we want to make sure we're solving your problems and not just, you know, doing work that's not really benefiting others. We're going to use KeyCloak and probably continue to use KeyCloak into the near future. So the KeyCloak solution will be available and supported, you know, for as far as we can see for now. It's working well for us. We hope it works for you as well. Other solutions that we're investigating include simplifying the KeyCloak installation, trying to automate or work around some of these steps, make it simpler. Like I mentioned, you know, can we eliminate the dual host requirement and so on? We may try to build a custom Duo plugin or get someone to do that. Maybe that's something someone would like to contribute. Someone that needs Duo, maybe you would explore that and try to build that, and we can try to integrate that. Or build a custom Apache authentication module for a simpler non-federated option. We have something that's a bit of a prototype. We explored just to try to get it working, to upgrade our default authentication to be from basic auth to something else. We want to try to eliminate basic auth as their default, but that's not really done yet, and we don't know when it will be done. It still has other considerations, but just mentioning that we're exploring that as well. So, another break here. Are there any questions or thoughts with regards to authentication or KeyCloak or other aspects of that? We really would be interested in knowing for example, what your authentication needs would be. We've heard before, that's why we went into two-factor authentication, eliminating basic auth, exploring Duo. What are some other areas? You know, did we not hit some of the areas that you're interested in? Excuse me. Okay. Oh, by all means, you know, feel free to ask the question later if not, if you don't have it now. Okay, we're going to continue on then. So let's talk a little bit about what's coming up. with Open On Demand and what's in the future. So we have a demo set up for the Gateways 2017 conference. The topic is going to be developing apps to extend Open On Demand. So we will talk about application development examples and things like that, you know, similar to what you've seen here, but more involved and, you know, beyond that. And of course, you're welcome to ask anything else there to our project members, whoever shows up there. It's going to be on Tuesday, October 24th from 12:55 p.m. to 2:20 p.m. And the link to the event is there in the slides as well. And we also, here are some other features that we're planning in the upcoming you know, development work. What we're planning to do is integrating Globus Online, integrating OpenXD Mod, and trying to come up with a packaging and simpler installation solution. So, you know, one of the visions that we have for this project is that on, say, a Red Hat-based system, you can type yum install OOD or yum install Open On Demand, and once that finishes, you have a basic configured Open On Demand system ready to go. And all you have to do is configure it for, you know, however you want it to connect through authentication and so on. So you don't have to actually go through those steps. So go from our installation script to actually a packaged solution. And then once it works for Red Hat, we could possibly get it working on other systems if there is a request for that. And of course, we're looking for any other suggestions. You know, a lot of our work, we try to take suggestions from you to meet your needs. If there is something that if only Open On Demand had this, you would be able to adopt it, let us know, because we would love to actually get you using Open On Demand and putting some effort into that. That's a very important goal for us right now. So, you know, we just want to invite you to go ahead and get engaged and get Open On Demand. You know, right now Open On Demand is installed or being explored at more than half a dozen external sites, and we are and we've worked with pretty much everybody that's approached us. So we're happy to work with you on getting Open On Demand installed as well. So reach out to us, send us an email, contact us through the mailing list. You know, we have webinars about every 3 months, roughly quarterly. Let us know what you'd like us to talk about at the next webinar. Send us some suggestions. You know, there's no need for us to talk about stuff that's not interesting to you guys. So let us know what's what you want to know, and we'll do our best to cover those. Go to our website. It's right there on GitHub. And join our mailing list, please. Our mailing list is the main mechanism to communicate with everybody. So, you know, feel free to join it. Invite others to join it so that you can get the latest information. I was, you know, we announced the webinars on the mailing list. We announced the new releases. And then we also have very good discussions, let people ask questions and encourage discussions on there. Or, you know, hop on and get Open On Demand yourself. Go to our GitHub page, GitHub repo site, and check it out. So thank you. If there's any questions, you know, feel free to reach out to me. Go to our website or visit our project site. And happy to answer any questions. Otherwise, thank you for attending. Okay. If there's no more questions, go ahead and wrap up. By all means, feel free to ask on the mailing list or send me an email personally. My email address is right there, bgohar@osc.edu. Thank you, everybody, for attending, and we look forward to hearing from you in the future. Have a wonderful afternoon or whatever time of day it is where you are. Bye-bye.